All right. Excuse me. So we're taking a look at where we are with regards to our brains when they're on religion, being impacted by religion. There have been some recent advances in neuroimaging techniques that actually allow us to understand how our brains, and this is what they're saying, quote unquote, create a spiritual or mystical experience. Now, as we talk about this, I want you to be asking yourselves again, are our brains responding to what's going on, or are our brains creating what's going on? Are our brains creating, as they suggest, or are our brains responding? What causes the feeling that someone else is present in the room? Or what causes the feeling, the sense that we've stepped outside of our bodies and into another dimension? Dr. Anderson says that in the last few years, brain imaging technologies have really matured in ways that are really helping us approach some significant questions. Professor James Giordano from the Georgetown University Medical Center said that we're actually able to even understand when a person gets into ecstasy mode and identify specific brain areas that participate in the process. He says that when activity in the networks of the superior parietal cortex or the prefrontal cortex increases or decreases, when activity in the networks of those areas increases or decreases, our bodily boundaries change. Okay, now, let's follow him here. I'm not saying let's agree with him. Let's just back up, hear again what he's saying, and try to understand. It is possible to understand what we don't agree with. So let's just understand what's being said. When activity in the networks of the superior parietal cortex or in the prefrontal cortex, when activity in either of those areas increases or decreases, our bodily boundaries change. And they say that research backs them up. A study of Vietnam veterans shows that those who had been injured in the brain's dorsolateral prefrontal cortex were more likely to report mystical experiences. Their brains had been injured in that particular area, the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. Ones who experienced injury in that part of the brain were more likely to report mystical experiences. These parts of the brain control our sense of self in relation to other objects in the world. They also control our sense of bodily integrity. So we get the out-of-body sensation or the extended self sensation and the perceptions many people who have had mystical experiences confess to. If beings join the mystical experience, according to Professor Giordano, we can say that the activity of the left and right temporal lobe network has changed. The temporal lobe network is found towards the bottom middle part of the cortex. And when that activity changes, beings join the mystical experience. The parietal lobes are also the areas that Dr. Newberg's studies found to have lower brain activity during prayer. Given that the neurological roots of religious experiences can be traced so accurately with the help of the latest neuroscientific technologies, does this mean that we could, in principle, create these experiences on demand? So I think it's important here to make a distinction. Number one, is there a possibility that every spiritual experience that we have is created by our brains? Is it that all of those experiences are just created by our brains? Or is it possible to create some mystical or spiritual experiences? Is it possible that we can create? Is it a reality that all are created by our brains? Well, this isn't just a theoretical question. In the 1990s, Dr. Michael Persinger, the director of the neuroscience department in Canada, designed something that came to be known as the God helmet. The God helmet. Now, let's see where he's going with this. The God helmet. This is a device that is able to simulate religious experiences by stimulating an individual's temporoparietal lobes using magnetic fields. They're able to stimulate that part of the brain, the temporoparietal lobes, using magnetic fields. In Dr. Persinger's experiments, about 20 religious people, which amounts to just 1% of the participants, reported feeling the presence of God or seeing him in the room when wearing the device. 80% of the participants felt a presence of some sort, which they were reluctant to call God. 20 religious people, which made up 1% of the total number of participants in this experiment, reported feeling the presence of God or seeing him in the room while wearing this so-called God helmet. 80% of the participants felt some kind of presence, and they just didn't want to call that presence God. So speaking about the experiments, Dr. Persinger says that he suspects most people would call the vague all-around-me sensations God. But they're reluctant to employ that label in a laboratory. He thinks that of that 80% who said, yeah, I felt some kind of presence, but they did not want to call that presence God, of that 80%, the majority, had they not been participating in a laboratory experiment when experiencing that sense that a presence was there, they would have called it God, had they not been in the laboratory. If the equipment and the experiment produced the presence that was God, then the extrapersonal, unreachable, and independent characteristics of the God definition might be challenged. And so, of course, one of the questions we ask is, well, is this just another way that some people are attempting to do away with the notion that there is God? They figured out that something is happening with the brain when people have religious or spiritual experiences. And so they wanted to see if they could replicate the experience, the sense that a presence is here. And so if they can replicate that sensation, then they could say, well, we know that that was not God. We were using magnetic fields to produce that sensation, that experience. Remember now, I've been saying this for years, we are the immaterial part of us and the material part of us. The immaterial part of us, again, being that part of us that is not made from matter, not made from the earth. But many of us are convinced that God did breathe the breath, the pneuma of life, into Adam. We don't see that breath. He breathed the breath of life into Adam, and Adam became a living being, a living soul, a living being. He was in existence when he was just matter. But he did not come alive until his matter was joined with what became his spirit, his breath, his pneuma. Greek word for breath, spirit. He wasn't alive. So let me ask you this. What are the chances that if Adam had been hooked up to the machines using the magnetic fields, working with his brain, what are the chances that he would have had the sensation that there was a presence around him, somewhere close by? If that experiment had been run on Adam before he had the breath of life breathed into him, which means before he came alive, before he came to life, before he came to life, is it possible that his brain, that he would have sensed a presence somewhere close by, if this magnetic field experiment had been run on Adam before he ever received the breath of life and became a living being? How about a dead person today? They have this magnetic field working with their brains. What are the chances that they will sense, the dead person will sense, a presence somewhere close by? Again, my guess is it won't happen. So again, it's so important for us to remember we are the immaterial part of us and the material part of us. And when it comes to this whole notion of the brain and spiritual practices, etc., the person in spiritual practices, the person in religious experiences, is it possible that the immaterial part of us is responding, but we just don't have a way of testing it? We know that there are certain types of experiences that can be replicated. I mean, false memories can be planted into people's brains. False memories. They can remember things. A person can tamper with their brain and have them remembering an event that occurred in their lives when that event really never did occur in their lives. So we can help people experience the emotions that went with that memory, that were involved with, that are associated with that memory, even though they never experienced that circumstance, that situation. So what does that mean? Yeah, we can replicate different types of experiences, but that does not necessarily debunk the whole notion. You know, just because people have figured out how to manipulate the brain to have certain experiences, that does not mean that the real does not exist. That doesn't mean that people who practice meditation, practice prayer, practice study of the word, don't have real experiences with a real presence of a real God. That's still not disproven. Well, we're going to take a look at this some more. I think it's worth looking into. So I appreciate you all for thinking through this with me as we talk through our brains on religion. We'll continue this discussion next week. When we come back, let's take a look at the importance of reconnecting. Sometimes we have some beautiful connections with people, whether we're talking about family or friends or both. And sometimes those beautiful connections become not so beautiful. Let's focus on how to reconnect when the connection has been broken.